Levon Koguashvili, welcome to Reimagining Soviet Georgia. Thank you so much for joining us today. Why don't you introduce yourself? Who are you and what do you do?
Hello. My name is Levon Koguashvili. I'm a film director and writer from Georgia, Tbilisi.
Great. And so what are the most, what are some films that you've produced? What are your last few films that you've made?
I do both fiction and documentaries. My last fiction film was called Brighton Force. And I did also a documentary recently, which I'm still finishing. It's about pandemic in Georgia. It's called Georgian Pandemic. And I did a couple of other movies, fictions, Street Days, Blind Dates. I did a couple of documentaries, Women from Georgia, Kogita's New Life, and some short films back when I was studying filmmaking in New York.
Did you ever emigrate to the US or did you only go there to study?
I only went there to study. Immigration was never part of my plans. I studied first in Moscow, a Russian film school in the 90s. And then I came back for a short time in Georgia. And then I had a chance to go to New York. And I went to New York University, the School of Arts. And that's where I studied film as a master program.
Yeah, my first question was going to be like, how did you get interested in film in the first place, growing up, or when did you realize that you wanted to become a director or involved with film?
I never really wanted to be a filmmaker until I was maybe 16 or 17. And it was, I remember very clearly this moment. I think it was 2 or 3 months before I was about to graduate from my high school. And in Georgia, and especially at the time, Soviet Georgia, it was still kind of Soviet Georgia, 1990. I mean, it was end of Soviet Georgia, beginning of something new. When he was finishing the school, high school, he was supposed to enter the college, or we called it university at the time. And I didn't really know where I want to study after the school. So I chose some random profession, which was related to geography and economics of the foreign country, something like that. And that's 2 to 3, and I was 2 to 3 months before the exams started, national exams. I saw a movie at night at home. It was Miloš Forman's Amadeus, and I liked it very much. I was very under influence. I was a very emotional person, I guess. When I saw something strong emotionally, I was affected for a couple of days, living in the world of this movie or in the world of the book which I read. And so I was under the influence of this movie. And next morning, I met my neighbor, and he told me that. He was going that they opened a new department in the Institute of Theater in Tbilisi, which was called film producing, which was something very new for Soviet country, because there was no such a job as a producer in our film production system. So I remember very clear that without even hesitating, I said I'm going there too. You know, so it was like an instinct. Absolutely emotional instinct. I went there and I was accepted to this school. And that's how it started. But it was not really, I really didn't really know that what I wanted to do in this field, whether I wanted to be a director or whatever. I just wanted to be close to this world of images, which I loved very much. So this journey probably started there. But it took a long time until I really decided, 5, 6 years until I really decided that I want to be a film director. Because after a year or two, after I went to the school, there was a civil war in front of our institute, and the tanks were shooting back and forth. So it was the end of my studies. And then there was a war between, you know, Georgian Abkhazian war. And lots of guys from my generation, older or a little bit younger, many of them went to the war. And me and my friends, we also kind of wanted to go to the war, but I don't think it was really serious. You know, it was just, you know, this childish and, desire to do something, romantic. And so we never went to the war. But I said myself that probably because it was not really serious, and maybe we did not really see ourselves as soldiers. But I saw that maybe not soldier, but I should try to be a war reporter, a journalist, and do something there. And then I heard that there was a new TV channel, independent TV channel, opened, and they were hiring young guys, and they were doing different kind of TV. So I went there, and I was accepted. I saw that they will send me to the war with the camera, but they told me that I should start doing something in Tbilisi and try myself if I can do it, anything. So I ended up becoming a reporter for a couple of years in Georgia, which was very exciting, very interesting time for me. I learned a lot. And then, so after being reporter, then I went to, there was a job I could do in Austria, Vienna, for 1 year. And then, like after 2 or 3 years, being reporter and doing TV, and I basically, by the way, I loved it very much, but I had the feeling that I don't want to do it all my life. That there should be something else, because the one thing which I did not like in journalism, that you're always reflecting on something. Something happens, you have to respond. And I didn't like this being in this respond mode all the time, and also, when we started doing TV, it was basically probably the romantic time of TV, because it was not at the time, at least in Georgia, it was still very young, so political parties didn't know how to use it, and rich guys. It was still kind of free TV, which I don't see anymore anywhere in the world, maybe except some YouTube channels or whatever, right, which right now happening. So. Yeah, so it was, and then in a couple of years, it was clear that it won't last too long. That already there are some influential people who, and at the time, influential people were very much related with crime, serious crimes as well. So they tried to grab our TV as well. So I thought, hey, it's a good time. It's a time to leave. And I also had an offer from Austria to do something there, and that was 21. And I said to myself that, why not? It's time to start exploring the world. So I went to Austria, worked there for 1 year. Then they sent me for a short trip to Moscow, because it was related to some magazines. They were publishing magazines. I was in a company in headquarters of these magazines, and they sent me to Moscow to do some, I don't remember, something related to this editorial thing. And I went to a film school. I said, "Hey, listen, I was in Georgian film school. I never finished it. Then I worked as a reporter, and I want to continue my studies. I don't really necessarily want a diploma, but if I just can attend the classes, I'll be grateful." It's because I had such savings by the time, because working in Austria gave me possibility to save some money. And they said, "Okay," and I became a freelance listener in a film school in Moscow, and moved there and started from scratch. But I remember as soon as I went there and I started watching like good movies on the big screen, I understood that the search of profession is over. That's it. That's what I want to do.
Well, that's a really great story. Not everybody has this wonderful, time finding their profession. Seems like you had a pretty good road. So where do you pick your characters though? So one of the reason I'm so attracted to your films is because it comes from things I know that I experienced, care workers, the women workers and immigrants, ex-cons in Gogita's New Life. People who have gambling debt or gamblers, and so on. And so, how do you choose? Like, you sort of are, I feel like you represent the sort of the underclass, of Georgians. Where did you choose those characters, and how do you develop those, the scripts?
Situations are very different when you look for stories and find them. The situation, circumstances are very different. To start with New York. In New York, when I came to study to film school, for me it was very important and difficult to find my voice. I'd say maybe sounds pathetic, but as a filmmaker, you have to find your subject, your topic, your angle. So, and being in this amazingly interesting but strange city, which is New York, I remember very clearly that I made my first film for NYU, which was a short film, and it was assignment was to do MOS, which means film without dialogue and music and exterior and black and white. It was the first assignment, so it's something very close to the roots of the cinema, silent movies. I had very hard time finding a story, because and then I came up with a story of a robbery in the street and that la 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 la. So it's it and it at the end it worked out okay. I even got a little scholarship for that movie, but as a filmmaker, I didn't really understand why I was doing it. Anyone could tell this story. It was something not very emotionally close to me. And then I remember the next assignment was to do a documentary film, short documentary, without interview, kind of observational documentary, exploring someone's life and revealing someone's characters through images and life. So also very good assignment, I think, great assignment, which helps you to discover the film language and et cetera, et cetera. At the time, I was living in a family of Georgian immigrants, father and son, because I didn't have money. I could not pay for my rent. They were distant relatives of my sister-in-law. So they generously accepted to their house. I was living there for 1 year. It was father was in his late 70s, early 80s, with Alzheimer, dementia, and he didn't remember anything except his son's name. He came to America because his first wife, who was a Russian Jewish immigrant, when she immigrated and the tough times started in Georgia, this ex-wife, they were still officially married. So she invited him as his husband. So basically saved his life because it was a difficult time in Georgia. So ex-wife helped his ex-husband to immigrate with his son to America. So they got green card and they were living there on their having this all the benefits, Medicare and Medicaid. I don't remember the names of these insurances. So they had this apartment which they're paying very little money, social kind of apartment. And I was living with them. And so this man, after arriving in America, he got Alzheimer. So you have this lucky 80-year-old man from Georgian province living in New York without understanding where he lives, looking at the from his window at this views of Brooklyn, and there was snow in Brooklyn, and he sit next to the window and watching, and his son coming back and forth, and he's waiting for his son next to the window. And so I started to shoot the father just to get used to the camera, And as soon as I put the camera and had the guy in the frame, Georgian immigrant without memory, sitting and w looking at the Brooklyn, I understood what I was shooting emotionally. I had the right away had the emotional link to this guy. Because I felt his background, I knew his, I understood why he's wearing this, this outfit right now. I know how they're having their breakfast. And in movies, it's very important to know what are your characters having for breakfast, And that was my problem in America. I didn't know what Americans are eating for breakfast. You know, I couldn't feel it. And I knew what Georgians were eating. So as soon as I started shooting Georgians in America, I knew that I found my angle. You know, I can tell something about this country, but from my Georgian perspective, and from my angle. So, and that's how I discovered the world of Georgian immigration. And so I said, I'll do that, you know, and it will be my world and I will discover it. And in this world, I felt myself very natural, very free, and emotionally excited, you know. So, and then I made a film about the father and son. Which is a very special film for me, because that's, I think, where I found a little bit of my style, if I have a style, but I think I have a little bit of it. So that's where I started, you know. And then I did a so then I moved on, and I started exploring this world of Georgian immigrants. And when you're exploring, you're looking for professions which are cinematic, which are interesting to shoot, because not all the jobs are interesting to shoot. You know, it's very difficult to shoot a writer, you know, because he's sitting and writing, and nothing exciting about his physical activity is there. But you know, but when you have like a day laborers who are standing in the streets of Brooklyn and freezing in the wind in the winter and drinking coffee without speaking English, and then the police comes and they run away and the pigeons are flying around. So, and it's interesting world, you know. You can find movie there. So then I started looking for some cinematic, and you're also looking for some conflict. You know, you need conflict to write a script in, you know, a situation where it's which contains conflict. So, and Georgian immigrants' life at the time was full of conflict, because it was still very fresh immigration, 99% illegal. And when you have illegal Georgian guys and women coming to amazing city of New York without speaking English, living together in these illegal hostels in Brighton Beach, and they're looking for jobs and discovering life in America with families left home, and you know. There are stories, and I was very lucky to be there with my camera, and so I was just, you know, trying to shoot as much as possible and to write as much as possible. So that's how I discovered an immigrant. So immigration, Georgian life, America, New York, a different angle on New York, and jobs which are cinematic and which have conflict. So day laborers, caretakers of elderly people. Those are all very cinematic jobs, and that's why I made movies about them.
I immigrated to the US, New York in 1992. And so I lived in US in Brooklyn from 1992 to 1995. And most jobs were exactly this. You know, my brother and my stepfather would go and try to find jobs and, you know, standing around try to get picked up by someone. You know, manual labor. And my mother was a care worker, taking care of elderly. And so this is very, very, very like how, you know, fish and water kind of what you speak of. But how do you think this discussion of sort of the American dream plays into it? Because when I went, I was told I was going to find, you know, streets of gold and everything was like perfect, you know? And I remember I was 8 years old and I found New York to be so dirty. I was so confused. Like, why is this like paradise so dirty? Like, this is what I was not expecting. And then seeing sort of the poverty levels and, you know, people used to like piss all over like our apartment building before you go in, you just smell like piss everywhere, you know? And it was just like really different than this idea that I had been told in Georgia. And this, my mother also had a lot of trouble negotiating this dream that she had under, you know, thinking what it was going to be like, with what it was actually like. So do you think you had that theme coming up all the time when you were shooting and looking for stories? And also just face it, like lots of immigrants were also plugged into stealing, you know, as much as possible. Like that was another big part of staying alive.
Personally, I was pretty grown up when I went to study in New York. I was 29. I was not young, you know, and I've been to America a couple of times before I came to New York to study. So there was some I did not expect. I would just expect I never expected to come to a paradise. I expected to come in a extremely interesting city, which is also a very difficult city, but amazingly interesting city, very diverse, and that's what I really found. And I'm very grateful that I started my filmmaking career in this one of probably the most cinematic cities in the world. As for American Dream and I was just following real stories, you know, from the very beginning, and I was not judgmental about American Dream, or I wasn't doing any concepts about it. I was just depicting life, you know. For example, in a short film, The Debt, which I shot there, it was pretty much based on some real events. Maybe we've got, of course, we reworked, but I didn't want to. Because I don't think that the good stories is a story is a which has several layers, and there are layers of I don't know. For example, if you talk about Georgian caretakers, in the beginning I saw that I'm going to do a movie about heroic Georgian women, you know, who are sacrificing their life for their for their relatives. And for their families. And I saw this contradiction between people who can sacrifice basically their lives and who are doing this in amidst the most material world possible, right? Where everything is so much about that you are living only once and you have to enjoy the life and you have to that get maximum out of it. And when you suddenly have these strange women who are slaving their life, you know, in order to support other people, I saw that these two mentalities, you know, is interesting to shoot. But then when you start shooting and discovering this, you understand there are other layers to it. You know, you see the greeting of the family members who exploit these women and ask for more and more. And I saw only very few examples when the families would say that it's enough, mom, you know, come back, you know. I saw very few such families and understood that the greediness doesn't have nationality, you know. And it's about not greed, just greediness. I don't want to judge these people. It's about it's about values, you know, what are more important, the new car which you get from your mom who has to work 3 years for that, or to have mom without car at home, you know. And but not only the family members were it's also about it was women. They were kind of getting into this I don't know, rush for the you know, one more year and one more year, and let me buy not the small apartment, but let's bigger apartment, and you know, not in the suburb, but in the center. So it was something, and you understand it's the nature of people, you know, the human being. I don't know, call it materialism or whatever, consumerism, whatever, but it's in our blood. It's very difficult to stop and to see what is enough and what is more important to spend. To live in a bigger apartment or to spend 2 more years with your teenage daughter, you know, who needs you more than maybe the money you send. And I saw so many conflicts and so many dramas and so many ruined families because of that, that I understood that my story has so many layers. And I really can't say what is right, what is wrong. I try to show it in my film, different angles. Different layers. I also saw this American life. For example, when I shot this, when I was shooting this women, I was traveling to these small towns in New Jersey. I don't remember the names even. Small towns with similar house, empty streets, and I understood that in all these small houses, there are lonely old people whose families are spread around across this huge country because they're too busy making their money, you know, and busy doing their career and busy living their life. And then I saw this different kind of America, you know, with empty little towns, with lonely old people who are hiring these Georgian immigrants to take, or I don't know, immigrants from other countries to take care of for the, and understood that it's such a big subject, you know, what it's about something, it's about the world we are living, you know, without really thinking what is more important. And thinking that we're gonna be young forever, and rushing after something, you know, is it American dream, whatever dream, but you know, I know for sure that, and my respect toward these women stay is the same. I really, I'm very respectful, and to I understand how difficult it is to sacrifice something, you know. Now being already a father and grown up person, I know how difficult to sacrifice even with a slight bit of your comfort for someone, you know. But I understand the price of what they did, and this this respect state. But I have many questions whether or not this sacrifices are justified always, you know.
You know, I was in Italy. I'm also a head of a union here. So we have women workers in our union in Georgia. We also I went to Italy last year to interview Georgian migrants, care workers in Italy, and it's the exact situation, you know, like from 1990 in US to you know, Italy, Bari, you know, Naples, Italy, 2023. The women make insane sacrifices. There's all this trade-off between, you know, again, it's never enough how much money they send home. They pretty much are imprisoned, like they live with elderly people, not allowed to leave besides one day a week. So very difficult situation. And it's funny because one of our organizers, we went together. You know, I called her and she was in a marshrutka here. And I said, you're going to come to Italy with me to interview these women. And so she said, oh, great, we're going to Italy. And on the phone, and that's what everyone heard. And the marshrutka was like, oh, no, why are you excited about going to Italy? Like, to mention Italy here is like, it's like a prison sentence, you know? Like, going to Italy is like you're gonna not gonna see your family, you're gonna go somewhere horrible, be cooped up in a home, which is so interesting because in the US, if somebody says like you're going to Italy, sounds like the most amazing vacation ever. Yet to Georgians, it's like a death sentence, you know, Georgian women. And it's like so many of the women that come to us now here in Georgia, we try to organize and you know, win better working conditions and money for them. They will say, I don't want to go to Italy. I would like to improve my conditions here. You know, it's become this scare threat to their lives that if they don't make enough money, they have to go to Italy. So it's like, it's kind of incredible because your film is very much alive continuously. It's still going on. It's just in different cities and different women in different generations.
I really loved your film, Brighten Forth. I mean, this is obviously the one that we are kind of discussing the most. I really, really enjoyed it. There's a lot of things about the film that I liked, but maybe because I'm a historian and I'm studying the Soviet period and kind of the post-Soviet era as well, the scene in the film where they're having a dinner or an impromptu supra, and the Georgian friend befriend someone from Kazakhstan. He's a kind of main figure in the film, and then they sing the song "Suliko" together. Is one of my favorite parts of the film because, you know, the way that, as you already mentioned, like the post-Soviet immigration and immigrants are interacting with each other is neither romanticized nor is it demonized in the film. It's kind of like both, you know. For example, the main character who's in gambling debt to like this Russian mafia is kind of in a hostile and like, you know, kind of tense relationship. But then you also have this moment when the people are finding friendship and commonality through this shared past at the same time. And so I'm just like wondering how that scene came to be and like why you chose for the song Suliko to be sung. And what does that kind of scene mean in the film? And what does it say, I guess, about the subject matter you were interrogating?
Okay, to start with Suliko, we had the amazing Kazakh actor, Toli Bergan, by Sakalov, and when he came to New York, I said, you know, we're gonna shoot this scene and we need some song. He said, I know Suliko. He knew Suliko very well, very simple. So that's, and it's also fun because it's a cliche Georgian song, but sometimes cliches are good, you know. And because it was something, it was one of those songs which very many people of different nationalities in ex-Soviet Union knew, and so Suliko was one of those songs. This story with Kazakh was based on a real story which I heard from one person who was deported from the United States for some crimes, he told me a story how one of the guy from it, but it was actually I don't remember exactly, the guy was Uzbek or Kazakh, I don't remember, I think Uzbek, who was involved. He was hiring Georgian women as a hotel cleaners in Kansas City, and there was an issue when he didn't pay these women for several months. So these women found these tough Georgian guys living in Brooklyn, being involved some, some crime activities, and they asked them, can you talk with this bad guy and get our money? And if you got some money, you can get your share. So it's a real story. And they kidnapped this guy from Kansas City and brought him to Brooklyn. It's a real story. And then they didn't know what to do with this guy because this person had this all the money sent back to his hometown, and it took some several days until he transferred his money back. And then after that, it was a dilemma, what they would do with this guy, because if he would go to the police, it was the kidnapping, which was the almost life sentence in America, right? So, and they didn't know how to get rid of this guy without being under the threat that this guy would go to the police and arrest these guys. And so the solution was, which one of the Georgian guys came up with, was that, let me stay with this guy for a couple of days. And so he started hanging out with this guy, drinking with him, explaining that it's not very nice behavior when you don't pay women, and it's against the moral code of real men. And they started drinking like weeks and weeks together, and so they ended up becoming very good friends, and then when they let this Kazakh Uzbek guy go, he wouldn't go. He said, I want to stay with you. So it was about some strange friendship which started after kidnapping from Kansas City. On its own, it's a whole movie, It can make a whole movie about this story. But I learned about this story of when the script was already written, and we decided to insert somehow this episode in the film, and that's why we chose this shortened version of it. And then we changed to Kazakh because now I remember, because we were missing some money during the shoot, and one of my producers told me that there are some Kazakh producers from LA who are ready to invest in your movie if you cast Kazakh actor. And so I googled Kazakh actors in on internet and found Tolik. I liked the face. Then I did the Skype audition with him, and in 3 days Tolik was with us in New York, and we shot him, and he knew Suliko. So it's filmmaking, But to answer your story, why? Because why this scene? It's based on real events, and it's based on real events. But then you, as a director, as a writer, you choose because it is. You know, for me, why Brighton is important, or why the films I'm making are important for me, because you've seen so many crime movies. You've seen so many kidnappings. You know, nobody can do, and nobody can. You know, you cannot surprise anyone with brutality or, you know, blood and blah blah blah. But when you have this ambiguous behavior characters, when they are both ugly and nice and they're stupid and beautiful at the same time, and when they sing, and you know, that's when you start making your kind of movie, you know, which I call maybe Georgian movie, Georgian film. You know, that's what for me the Georgian film is about. You know, it's about comedy and drama, drama in the comedy, and you know, when the tears and laughter are so much mixed up together that you cannot understand where is the border.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's also my favorite scene because it is like this couple of things where it's like workers are not getting paid. I love the militancy that they decided to do something about it. And then the guy's like, well, my mother needs cancer treatment, so I'm sending her to Korea, which is so typical of like collapsed, you know, social system in post-Soviet countries. So you have to send somewhere else to take it. So you just like you don't know who to feel bad for in that situation. You're kind of torn. Like, well, you want to save the life of someone, but these women are also not getting paid. And it is so post-Soviet, you know, it's like such a beautiful, I think that scene. Which I have like recorded and have posted before on my Instagram and others and send it to all of the labor people and be like, this is the most perfect scene of like the dilemma of unions as well in Georgia, right? Like, because like everyone's poor in some way, right? And you're just trying to struggle against like, you know, the owner, the company, and yet they also are struggling, especially in also in US. So that scene is, I think, like if I had to pick one scene to describe sort of the post-socialist 30 years, I would pick this scene because it's so great in that. And also this like this beautiful thing of having a common, you know, because there was a common language of Russian and having a song that they're able to unite all these disparate people. That scene shows the sort of the charming side of that, you know, like that sort of the specialness that you're able to connect with people that I would not have anything in common with in any other situation. That's captured so well. And I actually really love that you keep it in some ways ambiguous because people are both good and bad, you know, like you can't make a judgment of like one or the other. It's like everyone's in a shit situation trying to climb out, you know? So really, I love that scene. I just wanted to tell you.
Thank you.
It's great.
Thank you. Thank you. We enjoyed making, we enjoyed shooting it. So.
This is a slightly different topic, but you know, I was curious about some of your opinions on the history of Georgian cinema and Georgian cinematography, and if you have any favorite directors or films in the Soviet period, especially. That inspire you or that you find to be your favorite.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think Georgian film heritage is a very important part of I think of my at least perception of what the filmmaking should be about, I feel that my responsibility somehow is to continue the tradition. You know, it might sound a little bit, you know, loud, but that's really how I see it, you know. And because I was so grateful to belong to this amazing film culture, which really existed in a small country, despite of all hardships of censorship and everything, that we had number of outstanding directors and number of outstanding films. My personal favorites are. Our probably Otario Celiani's Georgian trilogy, Falling Leaves, Pastoral, and there was a singing, mocking, singing Blackbird, or I don't remember what the English translation is. And some others. So there's a great Georgian film, Salt of Svaneti, from 20s. It's a documentary about mountainous village in Svaneti. Fantastic images and amazing quality of filmmaking. There are some other filmmakers, Shengelai brothers, and so yeah. And I think there was a very good school and very good group of filmmakers, especially who started working in 60s, 70s, and probably it all finished in 80s, mid 80s, when the last great Georgian movies of Soviet time were made. Then there was a difficult 90s, very difficult 90s, when everything stopped, basically. There were some films made here and there, and there were still some talented filmmakers for sure, but still the process was completely, the system collapsed totally. And then you have 2000 early, and when a group of young filmmakers who managed somehow in this turmoil to get a decent education, usually abroad, and we came back to Georgia, and the country was more or less stable, and some funds for film, not much, but still some funds were became possible for filmmaking every year. And so when you have the new generation with this education, some money, and when you have traditions in your backbone and blood, I would say, and when you have a crazy Georgian recent history with drama everywhere you look, then you probably you have chances to make something interesting, and the new Georgian cinema started, I think, and despite of short period, I think there are a number of interesting films. I don't know if it's a full continuation of that very strong Georgian Soviet cinema, but I think there's some good examples of the tradition is still living,
Yeah, absolutely. Though I always see like every Georgian film is now like usually like a different government. You know, it'll be like the country of the Netherlands and this whatever made this film. So it's almost always like outside funding to get it. And even some of the films also are like, you know, I mean clearly because funding is such a serious issue, they have to make it part of either sometimes activism or another country's call or so and so forth, even though there's so many filmmakers who want to be filmmakers in Georgia, and it definitely is part of our culture now. It's such an ingrained way. To go back to the fact that it is difficult to, I'm sorry, Brian, just go back to the film Brighton, but the whole premise of you know, gambling, being in debt, you capture that so well. Of course, it's very dramatic, you know, ending. And there are actually a lot of people who have taken their lives because of gambling, and it's so pervasive. That's also become, unfortunately, part of the makeup of very, you know, young boys, especially now when there's even gambling on the phone or everywhere. Maybe how were you inspired by that script of gambling? And also, why did you choose, and this is the most interesting part of like sort of a wrestler, right? Like his famous Soviet wrestler goes to rescue his son. Like, where did you get this idea from?
Gambling came from that it was an inspiration for the script and for the film. It was father who came to save his drug addict son in Brooklyn. It really happened. And when I met them, father was there, and he and his son were working together in the movie company. That's what I saw, and I was very much moved by this father who traveled all the way from Georgia to America to save his son in Brooklyn, because he was junkie in the streets of Brooklyn, which with high probability meant that he would die with overdose sooner or later. That's what was the common trend at the time. Lots of coffins were sent from states to Georgia with overdosed young guys. And so this father came. I don't know how he got his visa, because as you know, it was very difficult to get the U.S. visa at Georgia at the time. But he came, and he saved his son. And I was very much moved by this story. And it later became the foundation of the script. But before I met Brighton, I made a film called Street Days, which was about drug addiction. And in order not to repeat myself in terms of addiction, so we changed it for gambling, and which is also a very relevant subject, as you know very well, in Georgia, unfortunately. Wrestler was an idea which came from the script writer, Boris Frumin, who was my teacher at NYU, and after the school we ended up working together, and we wrote all the scripts for my films together. Brighton was written by Boris, and based on some notes and stories about immigrants which I provided to him during my researches in Brighton Beach. But the idea of Wrestler absolutely belongs to Boris, because he thought that he was the person who taught me that profession is very important, and profession has to be cinematic, and the profession has to move the story, the plot. And he also saw that the wrestling is very close to Georgian mentality, and it is, because as you know, wrestling is one of the most popular sports in Georgia. We have the Georgian national wrestling, which goes centuries in the history of Georgia. So it's pretty much part of the character. So it's a very Georgian thing in one point, and on the other hand, wrestling is something about the ethics and morale, because it's about a strong person, and really strong people are very humble and modest, and that's how we saw our protagonist, the strengths, but not which doesn't show off, and which is hidden, and it also related to lots of work, because if you want to become successful in this field of sport, you have to work like crazy, all your life. And people who usually know the price of that labor, they also have this sense of dignity, So that's how we saw our character, That's why wrestling. Plus, it's cinematic duel at the end of the movie on the beach, so something like that.
It was very Greek tragedy, but and also comedy as well.
Yeah, comedy. The tragedy always counts as comedy, That's how life it is. It's never black and white. It has so many, subtones and little different colors,
Also, the story of ex-con, another great character in Gogeta's New Life. So the man that wants to start over, and I'm assuming a certain period there was lots of people who went to jail and then were ex-convicts. Similar situation of starting over. I thought that was like one of my favorites. Like it's such that is a that is very funny. Like it is such a funny film. Even the way she's working out, exercising is like very comedic. Everything you do in that is like it's so brilliant. But like I thought this was very fun because my friend and I, he's a man, we watched the same movie and we discussed it. We discussed Gogeta's. And I felt horrible for the woman being forced to marry him. And my friend was like feeling bad for the man to be forced to marry her, you know? So we were looking at it very different angles. Because I'm like, she's successful. Like she's has like, you know, a cake shop or whatever. She's the one doing, putting so much energy. And he finds her repulsive. And he's just like an ex-con who doesn't have anything going for him, but somehow thought he could get someone much hotter than her, you know? And so, like, we were looking at it from very different perspectives. He's like, oh, he's forced to be with some, you know, ugly woman or something he doesn't want to be with. And I'm thinking that's the actually opposite. This woman is the one who's way worth above him. So how did you come up with that idea? And how, like, also, like, very, very funny, you know? Like, I think it's the funniest phone you have.
It's also a funny story how I ended up with this movie, because initially the idea was to make absolutely different film. I was writing a script about tough times in jail, Georgian jail in 2000. I started working on the script in after the 3 days. I wanted to. I was doing research about. About the tortures which were happening in the jail, and we knew about these stories very well. So many Georgians were in prison at the time, and a big number of them went through a very tough time in jail. Some terrible tortures, humiliation, rapes, and you name it. So we knew the stories, I wanted to. I started collecting those stories because I found them very dramatic, and I also thought it was my somehow obligation or duty to do something about it. As a filmmaker, it become very greedy, And when I started collecting these stories, I thought it would be great to somehow find a way to get inside the jail and see what's happening there. It will help me to write a better script. So at the time, I'm talking 2011, 2012, which is, it was extremely difficult to go inside the jail. It was, very, strictly protected and prohibited area to enter. So I found this. I came up with the idea to sell to the Ministry of Culture at the time and Ministry of Jails or whatever they were called. I told them I'm interested because I was already kind of established filmmaker with a couple of movies, successful ones. And I said, I want to make a film about spirituality in jail. I want to make a film about jail church. That's like kind of Crime and Punishment, Dostoevsky kind of angle. And so they were a little bit hesitant and suspicious if I was serious about my, my pitch. But at the end, after 2 or 3 months of thinking, they allowed me to go inside of jail. We're talking about, I went there in May of 2012. And I went there 5 or 6 times. Each entry was very difficult. I know, very detailed, going into this, searching you very carefully and, all doing all this paperwork. And it was great. Me and my cameraman. We went 6 times. I thought that once I enter there, I'll be able to find, besides the church, I'd be able to shoot something else. But I was very strictly observed and followed. I couldn't move my camera anywhere else. So I was basically limited to shooting in the church and the room next to it where I did a couple of interviews. And that's where I met Gogita. Who told me that he served 14 years and he's leaving jail in 1 week. And I said, "Can I shoot your first day when you get out?" He said yes, and I shot Gogita getting out, and I had 5 days or 6 days shot in the Georgian jail in 2012. Then I had to stop because there really was no sense going to jail again because I was shooting the same stuff again and again, the church service. Faces. So It wasn't worth going there again. And then I had to start working on my next film, Blind Dates, because I was doing it parallel to that. And suddenly there were revealed the videos of our tortures in jail. Probably we know those stories. You know, the leaked there was a leakage of the torture scenes in on internet, which basically changed the political system in Georgia. Because when people saw it visually, they were so outraged that the government lost the election big time, and the regime changed, and the situation in jail also changed. So then after I had to shoot Blind Days, then I had to do something else. And the initial idea of making a movie about Georgian tortures, tortures in Georgian jail, moved somewhere, was not relevant anymore for me. You know, I was busy with other projects. But I had started this movie with Gogita as a main character, and I didn't know what to do with that, you know, with this material. So I thought, and then the idea came to see what was Gogita doing. You know, after I shot him getting out from jail, I had a pause for 2 years, and after 2 years, I went to see him in his village in Gori region. And basically, that's when we started to do this movie. So initially, the idea was different. To make something about jail, and instead of that, I made a film about guy after the jail getting married. So that's what filmmaking is about, you know. Sometimes, you know, the roads and the obstacles and circumstances, they lead to a different situation. You cannot watch milking cows more than 3 minutes, you know, it's boring. I needed something to happen. And in documentary, you're just waiting, you know. I just was very lucky that he met Maka and this whole romance started. And then the rest was just a crazy adventure of me following them together. And Gogita's mother still thinks that if not me, they would never get married. So, well, so this kind of strange movie where you're in the, you know, witnessing romance going on, falling apart, understanding that happiness is not necessarily always the most beautiful girl maybe in the world, but someone who understands and someone who becomes your friend. And maybe Gogita is not the perfect option for someone who wants to get married, the guy with 14 years in jail, poor. But also if you find in him a soul which you can call a friend and a correspondent, then the couple can be formed.
Actually, Gogita is very fortunate. He seems to have a happy ending, unlike many others who do not have happy
Absolutely. No,
endings.
no, no. He has this will of doing, and you know, he's a fighter, I would say, in a way. And you know, was very happy and lucky to find Maka.
So all the films we've discussed, you don't just show what is happening in that period or in that place, like immigrants in the US or prisoners here in Georgia and so on, but you seem to add something to the reality to make it either fiction or documentary even that's more interesting. And so now you are working on, maybe you can tell us this latest project you're working on.
So we're working on a film called Guria. It takes place in a region called Guria. It's Western Georgia. And that's the story takes place in 1990s. It's a Georgian province in 1990s. It's a love story and story of friendship during the, you know, tough times of 1990s. I think it's also kind of comedy drama. Yeah. That's all I can say for now. And,
When will it be out? It's gonna probably years, right?
we've co hope to finish this year, end of this year. The plan.
Okay. Great. Can't wait to watch it.
You know, there's these films which set out to hit somebody over the head with like a political point. And then I think the thing about your films is that by just depicting working class life, by just depicting the real kind of struggles that people are living through. You're like developing a social critique through them. And I think that that's what really makes the films of yours that I've watched, and especially Bright and Forth, and so powerful, because it's through people's just everyday struggles and the depictions of the conditions that they're living that people are able to sort of come away with some lessons and some ideas about problems that working class people are living and going through. And so I guess the question I have for you is that, what role do you see for politics in filmmaking, and like how do you conceptualize the role of like, political messaging and like creating political ideas in and through films?
Probably somehow the political context could be a part of the film, but not in a direct way, I would say, because I think politics is not interesting enough to make films about, And I strongly believe that everything starts with an idea. If an idea is a big enough and strong, there's a big chance that the movie will be strong. And politics, I don't think, is an idea big enough or strong enough to make movie about. It's not so big, in a way. It's constantly changing, It's for me, politics is a comedy, and politicians are comical, usually. I like some movies where politicians are depicted, but it's more than about politics. It's about something else, and politics can serve as a, serve as a background, but it's always about something else, not about politics. Politics can be used because movies, I think, have to be bigger than politics and more than politics, and above the politics, which doesn't exclude using politics as a tool. And doesn't exclude that there will be some kind of message which someone can read as a political message in a film. Even, for example, as you mentioned, The Women from Georgia has some context, political context about immigration, what is America, what is American dream. Someone ca can call it a political. For me, it's a story of a different meaning, absolutely. I don't see it as a political film, but it might have elements of politics. And that's what I call layers. It can be one of the layers, but not the most significant one, but one of the layers. Other than that, I think just focusing on human being, interesting human being in an existential situation, in a situation where he has to reveal his face and re reveal his choice and all our history is a choice between we make choices we make between decent behavior and bad behavior. This is what interests me as well. And also when and also not judging too much people, because it's very difficult to judge someone because everyone has its own situation, background. And you cannot ask someone to behave perfectly, knowing his background, So for me, it's just to show the complexity of life. And under complexity, I mean comedy, drama comedy, and maybe a little bit understanding our weaknesses. I don't know, but something like that.
The interesting thing is, even with the best political films, are never like meant to be political in that sense, in that very direct sense. But what's so great is like that scene, say in Bright and Forth, about women not getting paid, them banding together, them kidnapping the boss, and so on and so on. Like that does a better job of saying what a union should do, like coming together and fighting the boss. You're not in the same problems, and showing working class problems that than thousands of dollars of NGO grants does. You know, like that scene does a better job of explaining it than tons of like NGOs receiving grants to explain to people what is labor rights and what is workers and so on. So it's like, but of course, lots of NGOs will try to finance films, you know, or donors try to make a film that they never can make that would be as sort of easy to understand as a normal person, you know, than all these kinds of money being put in to make films for them to understand any kind of political or civil or, you know, social, you know, rights or so on, you know. So that's what I like love about it is that it's your films without needing to be some kind of, you know, directed towards being political social commentary. They are naturally because they're great stories and most people's struggles are great, you know, are stories. And most actually despair has lots of great stories.
Damn it.